What better way to start our year off on the right note than to spend a few moments talking about the great plague that devastated London in the 1600s? Our theme for the month of September is covenant. While next week we will consider the gifts and challenges of being in covenant with each other here in this community, for today's sermon, I've been thinking about the larger covenant we humans have with and for each other, which, of course, calls to mind that horrific time in London's history. Luckily for you all, though, it's not 17th century London that has bearing for us this morning, but rather the tiny village of Eme in the north of England. As nondescript as Eme's place on the map is, its place in our human history is actually quite remarkable. For the most part, rural areas of England were spared the horrors of the Great Plague. The exception to that rule was the exceptional community of Eme, when in the early September of 1665, the local tailor, took delivery of a package of fabric from London. Finding its contents a bit smelly and damp, the tailor's assistant, George Vickers, laid out the fabric in front of a fire in the tailor's kitchen, and unbeknownst to him, unleashed a swarm of infected fleas. It would be two whole centuries before medicine could determine how the plague was started and passed on. However, it would be less than a week after opening that package from London that George Vickers would die, the plague's first victim in the village. Days later, the tailor and his wife and five neighbors were also gone. In a matter of days, it was obvious now to the rest of the 800 townspeople that the plague was in fact on them. How they reacted to that knowledge of almost certain death, what they did as a community in the face of such enormous fear, was an extraordinary act of love and courage and covenant, not just in and among themselves, but with and for their neighbors are in villages close to them as well. The town's minister came up with a plan in three parts, a plan to which all the adult residents of the village agreed. In a time when their most profound fear had come to fruition, they agreed, all of them, to a one, on what they must do. The first two parts of the plan dealt with their covenant with the God of their understanding, the third with their covenant with each other and the larger world. First, until the plague ran its course, all church services would be held outside. Doing so was the only way to ensure that corporate worship could be continued while at the same time reducing the risk of spreading the infection. This was a monumentally huge theological shift. Worship only happened in God's house, but not for them, not anymore. And second, each family would bury their dead on their own, away from church grounds, usually on their own property. Again, this represents a tectonic theological shift, because it meant that the dead would not be buried on heretofore consecrated ground, but that the ground, any ground, would be consecrated by the fact of their burial. Now, as much as the first two parts of the minister's plan were monumental decisions for the deeply religious people of Eme, it was the third part of their plan that was the most profoundly moving. They agreed to self-quarantine, to cut themselves off from the rest of the world, to stay together. It would have been so easy and understandable for any who had the means and a place to go to run away in the hope of saving themselves and their families. Yet in an attempt to keep the plague from spreading throughout northern England, they banded together as a community and waited for death to come. Had people fled, many of the 260 or so people who died might very well have survived. Yet the cost of leaving, of potentially spreading the plague to others, was too high a price to pay. Although they remained to themselves, they did not weather the disease entirely by themselves. Residents of surrounding towns would drop off food and supplies at the stones that marked the boundary of the town, as well as the town well. And in turn, residents of Eve would leave coins that they soaked in vinegar as a way of cleansing them as payment. More often than not, of course, the coins went uncollected, not out of fear that they were infected, but rather an acknowledgement of the sacrifice the people of Eme were making, an acknowledgement of the covenant that all of them were upholding. There are only two known cases of members of the village who, during those awful months, almost a little bit over a year, left. Only two people out of 800 left. The two who did leave left towards the end of the ordeal, one just overcome with grief after burying 12 members of a neighboring family, and then in a week's time, all seven of her own family. That the people of the village, except for those two, made and kept their covenant with each other and the larger world is stunning and a remarkable part of our collective inheritance and history as a people. We are, as the poet Gwendolyn Brooks wrote, each other's business. We are each other's harvest. We are each other's magnitude and bond. This radical notion of connection and care and covenant is written throughout history. The people of Eme are but one powerful example of just how wrong the theory is that says an individual always striving after their own selfish interest is the highest good. The people of Eme prove just how flawed the notion is that people should serve their own well-being and only their well-being all the time, that in doing so, they are achieving the highest ethic. That understanding is at the heart of objectivism, the philosophical system developed by Ayn Rand and followed by too many current decision makers in Washington, D.C. And with a stridency that I rarely use in these settings, they are wrong, because we are born into relationship, as Rebecca Parker says, before we shape relationships by our conscience intention. We inherit covenant before we create covenant. Spending some time thinking about Eme this week brought to mind Sarah Vowell's very sprightly book, The Wordy Shipmates, which is her unique take on the history of the Puritans. While crossing the Atlantic on the ship Arabella, John Winthrop preached a sermon entitled A Model of Christian Charity, a sermon that Vowell states is, quote, a declaration of dependence. In that sermon, she writes, Winthrop utters one of the most beautiful sentences in the English language. We must delight in each other, he said. Make each other's conditions our own. Rejoice together, mourn together, labor and suffer together, always having before our eyes our commission and community in the work as members of the same body. He went on to say that knowing that the ligaments of the body, which are knit together, our love. Though Vowell rightly does refer to the Puritans as dreary religious fanatics, She also finds their story, a parallel experience to living in New York City in the days following September 11th, 2001, living as it was with the consequences of love rather than fear or hate or anger, living as part of a community brought together by tragedy and yet sustained by caring for each other. She writes that despite their unruly theology, their sometimes hair trigger hate, the fact of that image of being members of the same body was so agreed upon to the point of cliche makes the Puritans worth getting to know. In the weeks after the two planes crashed into skyscrapers here, on the worst days of our lives, I found comfort in the words of John Winthrop. When we were mourning together, when we were suffering together, I often thought of what he said and finally understood what he meant. We must delight in each other, make each other's condition our own, rejoice together, mourn together, labor and suffer together, always having before our eyes our commission and community in the work as members of the same body. She continues, perhaps my favorite of the countless times I broke into tears in the days following an attack was when I was watching citizens, New Yorkers, happily, patiently, standing in a very long line. They were waiting to give blood. When the local TV news announced that rescue workers sorting through the rubble in search of survivors were in need of toothpaste, half my block, having heard that there was finally something that we could do besides worry and grieve, had already cleaned out the most popular name brands at the corner deli by the time I got there. So at the rescue workers' headquarters, I sheepishly dropped off 14 tubes of Sensodyne, the toothpaste for sensitive teeth. We are members of the same body. Those stories, those poignant memories, bring to mind images and moments that are in the enduring truth of the marathon bombing here in 2013. When we saw first responders and race volunteers, spectators and other runners rushing towards those who were in need, and not a way to safety. We saw that over 6,000 people immediately joined an online registry to house stranded runners. We saw that those who lived in and around the finish line come out of their homes to give comfort and food and water and clothing to runners who were just wandering around the streets of Boston, not knowing what to do next, not knowing how to connect with loved ones. We heard that blood donations had overwhelmed almost all of the hospitals in the area. And my favorite story that gets me to this day, the Globe reported that on Tuesday morning, as there were barricades all over downtown Boston, our car pulled up to one of the barricades, getting as close as they could to Boylston Street. And the driver rolls down their window and hands the policeman a plate of homemade chocolate chip cookies. That still gets me. Because I bet at some time in their life, when they were upset or scared, in need of reassurance, someone made them chocolate chip cookies. It was what they knew to help. Such a simple gesture of kindness and care and connection and covenant. There were countless ways in which, in a week of insanity and cruelty, decency and kindness and caring were the immediate and instinctual response of so many. We are born into relationship before we shape relationships by our conscious intention. We inherit covenant before we create covenant. the threads of John Winthrop's Declaration of Dependence are part of our communitarian heritage as a country. Yes, there have been times when we have woefully and painfully fallen short and still do, and times when we have so elegantly fulfilled that vision. Along the way, we have been nudged and cajoled, chastised to turn back towards each other by prophets of every age. And what has become one of my favorite sermons, The Three Dimensions of a Complete Life, Dr. King said, quote, "The breath of life is the outward concern for the well-being of others. A person has not begun to live until they can rise above the narrow confines of their own individual concerns to the broader concerns of all humanity." We are bound by a social covenant that speaks to the very core of who we are. We are human, not perfect. Our history, with all its brilliance and tragedy, is all too human as well. It is part of our sacred covenant to do better by word and action, by being and deed. It is our sacred duty to know what systems of oppression, also given to us by our Puritan ancestors, are still at work, are still to our benefit, are demanding our attention to dismantle. Because we humans are made for each other, by each other, and for each other. We are in need of each other, and others are always in need of us. Our fate is bound together. We are interdependent, connected to each other, related to each other by virtue of our existence together. Our lives, our world, our universe are ordered toward and depend on our interdependence. No one, nothing can exist on its own. As we begin our year together, may we keep in mind the people of Eam whose strength and resolve, courage and care for each other and their neighbors still inspires more than 3.5 centuries later. May we remember the vision that John Winthrop had for some and make it true for all, that we make each other's condition our own, that we are members of the same body, that we are knit together by love. May we endeavor to live the words of Dr. King, that our concerns be the concerns of all humanity. May we endeavor to carry that legacy forward, continue the work so that love and kindness, courage and compassion, connection and care will always prevail. It is work that belongs to all of us because it is about all of us. May it always be so. Amen and blessed be.